Annamalai Swami. Annamalai. Annamalai Swami was born in a tiny village called Tondankurichi in Tamil Nadu, India.
They say Tamil Nadu. Is it Tamil Nadu or Tamil Nadu?
Tamil Nadu.
Tamil Nadu. India, 1906. His birth name was Chela Purumol. A reading of his horoscope indicated that he would become an ascetic or a sadhu.
Volume 3?
Same, yeah.
Nambiar?
Okay, Annamalai Swami.
Page number?
Doesn't say, let me see. Okay, 456.
456?
His father decided to try to avert the possibility by denying him a proper education. Good. I mean, that would even be more likely to become a sadhu. You know, what else he can do? That's mine, you know, I have no education. Okay. And yeah, they were masons by profession. He probably worked with his father, you know. Annamalai was a mason, his family. His schooling was stopped right after he learnt the alphabet. Despite his father's efforts, he taught himself to read. He recalled later, "Nobody had ever talked to me about religious matters, but somehow I had always known that there was a higher power called God, and that the purpose of life was to attain this God. Without being told, I instinctively felt that everything I saw was somehow illusory and not real. These thoughts and the idea that I should not become attached to anything in this world were part of my consciousness even in my earliest boyhood." He was invited by a lady in the neighboring village to come and stay in her house and read and explain Vedantic texts like Kaivalya Navaneetam. The next six years, he stayed away from his father. In another attempt to get him away from the spiritual path, his parents tried to get him married. He was about 17 years old then. So when he was 11, he went to live at that lady's house to explain Vedanta, Kaivalya Navaneetam. Not really clear.
Yeah, very clear.
His refusal was taken as a sign of madness. And he was given torturous native treatments to effect the cure. To no avail. Native treatments.
Take some neem leaves and beat him.
Or brand him or something, I don't know. Or beat him with a stick.
No, neem leaves.
Yeah. Neem leaves? Oh.
To drive the evil spirit away.
Though only a teenager, he took sannyas in a non-traditional way because nobody would give him sannyas in the traditional way. Mm. Because he probably wasn't a Brahmin or something. And they used to give sannyas to Brahmins only at one time. Yeah. Formal sannyas. Inspired by the famous saint Ramalinga Swami Gull, he started serving water to travelers in hot summer. Soon he started distributing gruel to the poor from a small hut that the villagers helped him build. One day he visited the Shankaracharya of the Kanchi Mutt in a neighboring village, who initiated him into the mantra Shivaya Namaha and asked him to write it 100,000 times. He followed his advice. In 1928, and this is when he's 19 or 20 years old, a wandering sadhu gave him Bhagavan's Upadesh Undiyar in Tamil. He knew nothing about Ramana Maharshi, nor could he understand Upadesha Undiyar. But he was certain that this was his guru. So he went round the village proclaiming, "I have found my guru. He is in Tirumannamalai. I have to go to him. I have found my guru." He went around proclaiming.
That's how they talk in the village. They talk loudly and then walk the main street. There are only about 50 houses, so everybody hears you saying.
That night he had a dream in which he saw Ramana Maharshi walking from the lower slopes of Arunachala to the old hall, which wasn't built yet. Oh yes, it was. At the threshold of the old hall, Bhagavan washed his feet with the water that was in his water pot. He prostrated to Bhagavan and then fainted because of the shock of having darshan. No, he was dreaming.
I know.
I wish he'd do it in his own words. It sounds nicer when he tells it.
I mean, he was dreaming and then he fainted in a dream, I guess. I mean, I'm just following the sequence here. Okay. All right. As he was lying on the ground, Bhagavan poured water from his pot into his mouth. He repeated the words, Mahadeva, Mahadeva, as the water was being poured in. Bhagavan gazed at me for a few seconds before turning to go into the hall. Now, they put him first person. Okay, they start off with quotes, but they don't finish quotes. It's all mixed up. So you don't know what he said and what there is. The villagers, knowing that he was a sadhu with no money, gave him some for his journey to Tiruvannamalai. On his way to Tiruvannamalai, he visited Shankaracharya and got his blessing. On his arrival in Tiruvannamalai, he sought out Seshadri Swami. He took a laddu as an offering. Seshadri Swami must have sensed his decision to become because he looked at him and indicated by gesture that he should place the laddu on the ground in front of him. Seshadri Swami had obviously been chewing betel nut for some time. A mixture of the red juice and his saliva was dribbling out of his mouth, soaking his beard and dripping onto the ground. Seshadri Swami picked up his laddu, smeared it with the saliva and betel juice that was staining his beard, and threw it onto the nearby road. As it broke on the ground, the crowd raced towards it and collected the pieces as prasad. He also managed to eat a piece. He means, I guess, Annamalai or... Mm. Or Seshadri Swami. I know it's not clear. Seshadri Swami started to shout at him in a very abusive way. This fool came to Tiruvannamalai. Stupid man. What did he come here for?
That was his nature, right, Seshadri?
Yeah, he was eccentric like this. He carried on in this vein for some time, implying that Chalap Perumal was wasting his time coming to Tiruvannamalai. Annamalai started to cry because he thought he must have committed a great sin to have a great saint insult him. Eventually, his attendant, Manikam, I guess Seshadri's attendant, right, and consoled him by saying, your trip to Tiruvannamalai will be successful. You will get whatever you have come for. This is Seshadri Swami's way of blessing you. When he abuses people like this, he is really blessing them. So, got someone to go along with to make up excuses. But it's true, you know, Seshadri Swami. If he would go up to some, you know, cart vendor, and dump his cart on the ground and everything, all the food go flying, all the fruit and everything, they would be so happy.
Yeah.
Because they believe that was good. Because that day they would sell every item that they had. Yeah. Right?
And also I think the women who wanted to get married or have children, something, some story about that.
His first meeting with Bhagavan is described as follows. I guess this is in his own words. I guess it doesn't have a quote there. But on my arrival, the part of the dream I had repeated it, that I had repeated itself, that, I don't know, in real life, I saw Bhagavan walk down the hill, cross the ashram, and paused outside the hall while he washed his feet with water from his water pot. Then he went inside. I sprinkled some of this water on my head, drank a little, and then went inside to meet him. I was alone in the hall with Bhagavan, who was sitting on the couch. I had brought a small packet of dried grapes and some sugar candy to give him. I placed them on a small table that was next to Bhagavan's sofa and prostrated to him. When I stood up, I saw that Bhagavan was eating a little of my offering. As I watched him swallow, the thought came to me that my offering was going directly into Shiva's stomach. I sat down and Bhagavan gazed at me in silence for about 10 or 15 minutes. There was a great feeling of physical relief and relaxation while Bhagavan was looking at me. I felt a wonderful coolness pervade my body. It was like immersing myself in a cool pool after being inside in the hot sun. He was granted permission. Okay, you know, there's no quotes or anything here. They just, no, they say, no, someone else is describing.
It really needs editing.
What? There's no, yeah, they messed this one up. He was granted permission to stay in the ashram, and Chinnaswamy allowed him to serve as Bhagavan's attendant alongside Madhava Swami. About 10 days after his arrival, he asked Bhagavan how to avoid misery. Bhagavan replied, "No, and always hold on to the self. Discard the body and the mind. To identify with them is misery. Dive deep into the heart, the source of being, and peace, and establish yourself there." As he was pondering on these remarks, Bhagavan surprised him by saying, "I was waiting for you. I was wondering when you would come." A few days later, in response to another question, Bhagavan said, "The path of self-inquiry is the aircraft you need. It is direct, fast, and easy to use. You are already traveling very quickly towards realization. It is only because of your mind that it seems that there is no movement. Your mind is making you believe that you are not moving towards self-realization." Soon after his coming, Bhagavan named him Annamalai Swami because he reminded him of a person named Annamalai Swami who was his attendant at Skanda Ashram. He died quite young. That other animal.
Is he the one that died of the plague?
Yeah. Annamalai Swami was very happy to have found such a great guru as Bhagavan, but he was disappointed with the conduct of other devotees and the management. And that's what we're not supposed to give our attention to.
Yeah.
In his own words, "I concluded that it would not be spiritually beneficial for me to associate with people who didn't seem to have much devotion. I know now that this was a very arrogant attitude, but those were my true feelings at the time." About 3 weeks after he arrived, he left the ashram and walked towards Polur. In his own words, "I had no particular destination in mind. I just wanted to get away from the ashram. The walk had made me very hungry," quote, I guess. Okay. "So I decided to go for bhiksha in the town. It was not a great success. I begged at hundreds of different houses, but no one gave me any food. One man told me that I should go back to Tiruvannamalai, while another man, who was serving a meal when I approached him, shouted at me, telling me to go away. Eventually, I gave up and walked to the outskirts of the town. I found a well in a field and spent about half an hour standing in it with the water up to my neck, hoping that the coldness of the water would take my hunger pains away. It didn't work. I finally got something to eat when an old lady came to do puja. She looked at me and said, 'It seems as if you are very hungry. Your eyes are starting to sink into your face. I don't have much myself, but I can give you some millet gruel.'" He began to question the wisdom of leaving Bhagavan. "Can't get no food. There, at least he got food, right? He began to question the wisdom of leaving Bhagavan. To help him decide if he should return to Bhagavan, he placed a large handful of flowers on the samadhi of Vithoba and started to remove them two at a time. There was a saint in this bulwark by the name of Vithoba. There was a famous saint.
Yes, Vithoba from Maharashtra.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, in this Polur area.
But he was a Maharashtrian saint.
That's another one.
No, this Vithoba is not.
There's one here. And,
I see.
You know,
I see.
He put on the samadhi of the saint, handful of flowers. He had decided in advance that if there was an odd number of flowers, he would return to Bhagavan. He got the indication that he should return to Bhagavan. Soon his luck began to change. As he was walking into town, a hotel owner invited him to his hotel and gave him a free meal and some money. He even prostrated to him. He had decided to return to Tiruvannamalai by train because he wanted to get back to Bhagavan as soon as possible. He traveled without a ticket. Oh, he's trying to save a few paise. He had the money to buy the ticket. He didn't buy the ticket.
But he didn't have the money.
No, he gave him money and food, he said.
But when he reached the town?
No. He got a free meal and some money.
Oh.
He decided to return to Tiruvannamalai by train because he wanted to get back to Bhagavan as soon as possible. He traveled without a ticket, wrongly assuming that the money he had been given would not be enough for the journey. His good luck continued on the train as the ticket inspector didn't ask him to show the ticket. A similar thing happened at the end of the journey. The ticket collector on the station platform said, "You have already given your ticket. Go, you are holding up the others." Thus, by Bhagavan's grace, he escaped on both occasions.
Mm-hmm.
The ticket collector. Like Bhagavan bought the ticket, but it only took him as far as Mabalapattu.
Mm-hmm.
So he used all his money. So you called yesterday, I heard.
Yeah.
He was at the airport.
Huh?
He was at the airport.
I was probably landing at that time, so my phone probably was still off.
That's okay.
Then Sarvapreet called me and I was in the Veda Parayanam. But I didn't...
I just needed a ride from the
corner, yeah.
I called you back right away, though. Not right away, when I saw.
I got your text later on after I reached home. That's okay. It was very. I didn't want to fall.
So Sarvapreet came,
right? Yeah, he came.
Yeah, I thought.
He didn't shrink.
Yeah. Yeah, you can squeeze.
On his arrival, he went straight to Bhagavan, prostrated before him, and told him everything that had happened. Bhagavan then confirmed that it was his destiny to stay at Ramanashrama. Looking at him, he said, "You have work to do here. If you try to leave without doing the jobs that are destined for you, where could you go?" Soon he was inducted into the construction work of the ashram. He didn't have any masonry experience prior to coming here. Although his father was a skilled mason, he supervised the building of storeroom, cowshed, dining hall, dispensary, revetment, bank, holding the water behind the stream, and various other projects till 1940. Bhagavan worked very closely with him, helping and supervising his masonry work. So what year did he say he arrived? 28 or 29, something like that, right? So at least 10 or 11 years. Bhagavan worked very closely with him, helping and supervising his masonry work. It was a blessed opportunity for him to interact closely with Bhagavan. Bhagavan sometimes gave him direct instructions on how a project should be carried out. As this was not always discussed with the manager of the ashram, sometimes led to differences of opinion. The rest of his experience is best told in his own words. And then in brackets, thus ends the account of Annamalai Swami's life with Bhagavan, written by the editors.
Well, that wasn't good. I mean, you can see it, so many interesting things in this.
Well, there's another place there, I'm sure he's in the other book also. Okay. Which is the 63 devotees of Bhagavan.
Oh, okay.
Probably another more of that. The following is written in his own words. Okay. Then they have some of Anamalai's writing. Oh, actually, you know, what he related to probably David Godman or David Godman got from other people.
Yeah.
There was a stream which flowed through the middle of the ashram. Bhagavan wanted to construct a huge earth and masonry wall about 100 yards long, which would permanently divert the stream and make it flow into Agni Tirtham, down the road. Bhagavan called it Rakshanai, which means protection. He told me several times that this revetment would protect the ashram against all future floods, which didn't work out. I mean, they have water coming into the Samadhi Hall. It got plugged up. That's what happened down there. It got plugged up. The drains from it, you know, beyond the ashram, and then it all backed up. Water came down by the side of the well and into the Samadhi Hall and everything.
Wow.
A few years ago.
It happened twice, in fact.
How did they stop that?
They didn't. Went in the Samadhi Hall and water all over. I don't know. They must have went down and found the place that's plugged up and unplugged it.
Mm.
My instructions given to me by Bhagavan were to build two parallel walls slightly inclined towards each other out of stone. These walls were to be 6 feet high and 8 feet apart at the top. As you build the wall, advised Bhagavan, fill the space between them with mud. If you mix earth and water together and compress it, it will be very strong. As I was carrying out these instructions, several groups of devotees came to watch and many people made fun of me. I was unperturbed by their comments, their criticisms, and their jokes because I knew that I was merely following Bhagavan's instructions. One day, while I was working on this wall, the tax collector of Tiruvannamalai came. After a few minutes, he remarked, "Why are you building such a big wall? Which fool gave you this plan?" I didn't like to hear Bhagavan insulted in this way. So I told him very angrily, "Go to Chinnaswamy's office and drink some coffee. Don't come here and interfere with my work. If you come and make a statement like this again, I will beat you with my sandals." The guy didn't have no idea he was talking about Bhagavan, you know.
I beat you with my sandals is like a very nasty way of talking.
Your sandals are...
And to the tax collector, you know, he's a big shot.
Yeah, when you say it in Tamil, right, the way you say it, it's like a very derogatory way of saying
it. Yeah, and he's a big tax collector of the town. I mean, he's a big guy. The teaching of Ramakrishna Paramahansa inspired my conduct to beat him with the sandals. If anyone insults your guru, you should hit him. I don't remember Ramakrishna saying that.
I don't know why you should hit him.
The tax collector went to Chinnaswamy and complained that I had threatened him. Chinnaswamy brought him to me and demanded to know why I had spoken to him like this. I told him what the man had said and that I was following Bhagavan's plan. Who is he to insult my guru? Chinnaswamy appeared to accept my explanation because he left with him and didn't mention the matter again. Bhagavan's judgment and foresight were vindicated. In the monsoon that followed the completion of the wall, the stream behind the ashram burst its banks. The resulting flood water came 3/4 of the way up to the wall. Fortunately, the wall was strong enough to withstand the pressure and to divert the water away from the ashram. The next big assignment given to me was the storeroom construction. I was somewhat apprehensive because I had no previous experience in construction and constructing buildings. My father had been an outstanding builder, but he had never taught me any of his skills. Bhagavan, knowing that I was nervous because of my lack of experience, helped me to do the job. Bhagavan seemed to have a natural flair for building work, which more than made up for my lack of experience. He always seemed to know how to make the right decision at the right time. For example, there were three very large arches inside the room, storeroom. The masons who had originally constructed them had done a bad job, and cracks had appeared in the walls at the top of each arch. Bhagavan gave me detailed instructions on how to grout the cracks and how to insert keystones in the top of each arch to strengthen them. I don't know how he knew about such things. I'm certain that he had never constructed a masonry arc or arch before. These stone keystones are still visible because they protrude about 1.5 inches on either side of the wall. Bhagavan gave me clear instruction to follow for the construction. Chanaswami had his own ideas about the building and kept insisting that I carry them out. I had to refuse. This caused Chinnaswamy to get very angry with me because he felt that I was deliberately flouting his authority. I wasn't at all concerned by his disapproval. I stuck to my guns because I knew that it was improper to go against the will of Bhagavan. Although I did not know it at the time, we were destined to have similar quarrels about almost every building that I constructed. Occasionally, I got very frustrated. There are many difficult problems to overcome. Also, it was midsummer, there was no shade, and the heat was often unbearable. Several times the thought came to me, why is Bhagavan giving me all this trouble, making me work like this under the direct rays of the summer sun? Once, while such thoughts were passing through my mind, Bhagavan came to see what progress I had made. Detecting the mood I was in, he said, I thought that if I told you to do the job, you would be ready and willing to do it. I assumed that you would be capable of doing. If you can't do it or find it difficult, just leave it. Bhagavan was giving me an opportunity to admit defeat, but I refused to take it. Now, hearing Bhagavan's words, a great determination arose within me. Even if this whole body is destroyed in Bhagavan's service, I thought, I will stand by his words and do whatever he asks of me. I told Bhagavan that I was willing to carry on. When the storeroom had been completed, Bhagavan asked me to make a bas relief of Avanachala over the entrance.
Bas relief.
B-A-S?
Bas, yes, it's French. Yeah.
He wanted it to be made out of lime plaster. He had already taught me how to make lime properly, but I had no idea how to sculpt it into the three-dimensional picture. I don't know how to start making a figure like this, I told Bhagavan what to do. Bhagavan took a piece of paper and drew a picture of Arunachala on it. You see it if you go in the storeroom. Have you
seen
that?
Yeah. Okay. It's sort of like this, right? The white one, this on top of the table there, on the free table, the book where we have.
The white one.
There. The white. Oh, the white. Plaster.
It's a relief.
Yeah, like but, protruding out.
But it's, yeah, in little sections.
Yeah.
But the mountain. It's in the storeroom. If you go inside, you got to look at that. You got to look at it.
Right across from...
Dining hall.
Yeah.
That's the storeroom?
Yeah. It's an older building. It's before the dining hall. Okay. Okay. Bhagavan took a piece of paper and drew a picture of Arunachala on it. Apart from the summit, there were three lower peaks outlined against the sky. As he was completing the picture, he told me that the main peak represented Shiva, while the three subsidiary ones represented Ambal, Vinayaka, and Subramanya. Bhagavan gave me this picture and told me to make a figure out of line that corresponded to it. But Bhagavan, I said, I have no idea how to mold lime into shapes like this. How to do it? How do I do it? This time Bhagavan refused to give me any hints. This is Anamale, he said. You are also Anamale. You should know how to do it without me telling you. I accepted the commission and set out trying to execute it. I had grave misgivings about my ability to do it properly. But since Bhagavan had instructed me to do it, I couldn't refuse the job. I erected some scaffolding so that I could sit in front of the wall. For 3 days I sat there, playing with the lime, trying to make something that looked like Arunachala. I failed in all my attempts. My determination to succeed, unfortunately, was not sufficient to compensate for my lack of skill and experience. In the middle of the third day, Bhagavan, seeing that I was making no progress, climbed up the ladder and sat down next to me. He explained how the work should be done, demonstrating the correct technique with a few pieces of lime. After listening to Bhagavan and watching him work for a few minutes, I suddenly understood how the whole work should be done. When Bhagavan had satisfied himself that I had mastered the technique, he let me finish the job by myself. I completed the whole work before the end of the third day. The next day, following Bhagavan's instruction, I made another identical bas-relief. Ba. Why don't they spell it right?
Why did they write
that? B-A-H, right? Ba.
No, no, it's B-A-S. It's base. It's a base relief.
I'm kidding. I know.
Over the inside of the entrance door. Both of these, it's on both sides. Yeah. Both of these figures are still there. I've been told that nowadays they are painted and colored so that they stand out from the neighboring whitewashed walls. The next big project was building the cowshed. Our finances were always in a precarious position when we were constructing the large buildings in the ashram. Fortunately, because the buildings were erected at the behest of Bhagavan, we never experienced any real financial disasters. While the work was going on, enough donations would come to cover all the costs. If no building works were in progress, no donations would come. In all the years that I was supervising the construction of Bhagavan's building plans, there was never a day when a lack of money prevented us from working. Chinnaswamy eventually came to realize that if a project had Bhagavan's blessings, there was no need to worry about money. As the cowshed was nearing completion, he came up to me and said, "This building will be a success because of Bhagavan's plan. It is only because of his grace that we have been able to finance it. No, I believe you." Okay, I guess Chinnaswamy, this is in Claire, must have came up to him. Yeah. Bhagavan didn't come up to him and say,
"Yeah."
That doesn't, they're just cutting and pasting here. Yeah. In the beginning, when I first began to supervise the ashram building projects, I used to think, this job will soon be over. When it is finished, I can go back to the hall and sit with Bhagavan. Bhagavan had never told me, from now on, you must work full-time on these construction jobs. I had just assumed that in the times when there was no work to do, I would be able to go back to the hall and sit with Bhagavan. It was Bhagavan himself who disabused me of this notion. As soon as I finished one job, he would invariably find something else for me to do. In all the years that I worked for him, there was hardly ever a day when I was able to sit with him in the hall during working hours. I didn't feel this loss too keenly because several small privileges compensated me. In the early morning before the construction work started, Madhava Swami and I used to help Bhagavan with his bath. Both of us used to give him an oil massage on his back and legs before he took his bath. In the evening between 8 and 9:30, I was also allowed to massage Bhagavan's feet with oil. While I was massaging his feet, I would either talk to him about spiritual matters or discuss building plans with him. In the evenings, after I had finished the massage, Bhagavan also permitted me to rest my head on his feet for a few minutes. There was another small privilege which I greatly valued. There were two sittings for both lunch and dinner. Bhagavan always ate with the first sitting, whereas I usually ate at the second sitting. A lot of the workers still eat at the second sitting. Bhagavan would usually be finishing his meal as I walked into the dining room. If he was still eating when I arrived, I would sit opposite him and wait expectantly. My patience was often rewarded. On many occasions, Bhagavan would push his leaf plate towards me to indicate that I could have my meal served on it. The serving ladies would take the hint, put the leaf in front of me, and serve me my meal. Bhagavan made me work very hard, but at the same time, he was always very kind and considerate toward me. One incident which happened in the dining hall shows this very well. I had spent the whole morning supervising masons who were constructing some steps near the dispensary. If I had not been present, it is quite likely that they would either have failed to put enough packing under the stones or put the stones themselves in the wrong place. The work took so long, I was very late for my lunch. When I reached the dining room, I found that the food which had been served on my plate had gone cold, and there were several wasps sitting on it. One of the servers scolded me for being late. "You may be working," she said, "but we are also working. You should not you should not turn up late like this. You should come on time." Bhagavan, who was outside at the time, cleaning his teeth, overheard what they were saying. He called out in a loud voice, "Annamalai Swami is not keeping himself idle. If he had come earlier, the work which he has been supervising would not have been done properly. If you need some rest, you can go and have rest. I will come and serve Annamalai Swami myself." Told them off pretty good.
That's a pretty strong
This intervention shocked the woman so much that they took away my old meal and served me a fresh hot one on a new plate. There were other occasions when Bhagavan showed his concern. Once I had injured myself by dropping a large granite stone on my toe. I decided to spend the day resting in my room because my foot was far too painful to walk on. Many people in the ashram knew that I was injured, but no one remembered to bring me any food or medicine. Bhagavan noticed my absence during the midday meal and made a few inquiries about me. When he discovered that I had been left languishing in my room without food or medical attention, he got very annoyed with all the people there. "You are extracting so much work from this man," said Bhagavan. "You are all saying how wonderful it would be when all these new buildings are completed. But now that he is sick, nobody is bothering to take care of him." Bhagavan apparently continued in this vein for quite some time. As a consequence, after lunch, I was surprised to receive a rather shamefaced delegation of devotees bearing gifts of food and medicine. They apologized for their previous neglect and told me how Bhagavan had reacted to it. At some point in the 1930s, when I had already completed many ashram buildings, I received an unexpected visit from my father. I took him to the hall to introduce him to Bhagavan. On the way there, I told him, "Because you gave birth to me, I have brought you to Bhagavan. Please take whatever blessings you need from him." Okay. On the way there, I told him, his father, I guess.
Yeah.
My father was clearly pleased that I had become an ardent devotee of Bhagavan. "When you were young," he said, "I didn't want you to become a sadhu, but now I'm happy that I have given birth to such a son. Like Markandeya's father, I am happy that I have produced such a tapasvin, performer of tapas." When I took him to Bhagavan, Bhagavan started to tell him all about my work in the ashram. "All these big buildings were constructed by your son," he said. I immediately denied the claim. "No, no," I told Bhagavan, "they were all constructed by your grace. It is all part of your lila." How could I have done any of this by myself? Then my father made a surprising statement. Wherever you go, that place will be prosperous. I have seen this in your horoscope. There was a peculiar conjunction that indicated that temples and buildings would appear wherever you lived. That is why I tried to keep you at home. I wanted these buildings to be in our village. I knew that if you became a sannyasin, you would go and live somewhere else. I tried to prevent you from becoming a sannyasin by keeping you out of school. My idea was, if he ever learns to read, he will never read the scriptures and never have any interest in God. My plan failed, because it was your destiny to come here. I have no regrets. I am happy that things have turned out the way they did. My father stayed for about a month, and during that time we did Giri production almost every day. At the end of his visit, I took him to the station to see him off. While we were waiting for the train, he started to cry. Through his tears, he asked me if he would ever see me again in this birth. I had a strong inner feeling that the answer was no. However, in order to console him, I said, I don't think that we shall meet again in this birth, but perhaps you will take another birth and come to me. In that birth, we may both love each other. God can make all the arrangements for this. My feeling turned out to be correct. I never saw my father again. Sometime later, my mother also came and stayed for a month. I introduced her to Bhagavan and also did Giri production with her almost every day. At the end of the month, she announced that she wanted to stay in the ashram and look after me in the same way that Bhagavan's mother had looked after him at Skanda Ashramam. Because I felt strongly that this was not her destiny, I asked her to go and talk to Bhagavan about the matter. Bhagavan wouldn't give her permission to stay. In fact, he wouldn't even discuss the matter with her. When she asked him whether she should go or stay, Bhagavan said, go, and dismissed her with a wave of his hand. A few later... What?
How do you say it in Po or something? Po.
Go in Tamil?
Po.
Po, yeah. A few years later, I received a letter saying that my father was dead. After showing it to Bhagavan, I said, please bless him because he gave birth to me. Without this birth, how could I have come to your presence? Bhagavan nodded and said, yes. When my mother died, I made the same request and got the same answer. So, Bhagavan made the request to who?
Yeah, this is not clear.
Made the request to who? Yeah, to Arunachala? I don't know. Yes, when my mother died, I made the same request and got the same answer. My days as an ashram worker were coming to a close. Although I didn't realize it at the time, in retrospect, I can remember only one small incident which indicated that Bhagavan knew that my time in the ashram was coming to an end. I was doing some digging with a crowbar when Bhagavan came and asked me, did you decide to do this work yourself, or did Chinnaswamy ask you to do it? I told him that Chinnaswamy had asked me to do it. Bhagavan was not very pleased. So, he has given you work. Why is he giving you work like this? A little later, Yogi Ramaya remarked to Bhagavan, Anamalai Swami is working very hard. His body has become very weak. You should give him some rest. Bhagavan agreed with him. Yes, we have to give him some rest. We have to give him freedom. We have to give freedom to him. A few days later, I went to Bhagavan's bathroom to help him with a morning bath. Madhava Swami and I gave him the usual oil bath and massage. When the bath was over, Madhava Swami asked a question. Bhagavan, the people who take ganja, liyam, they call it an Ayurvedic preparation, whose principal ingredient is cannabis.
Ganja is cannabis.
Experience some kind of ananda. What is the nature of this ananda? Is it the same ananda that the scriptures speak of? Eating this ganja is a very bad habit, replied Bhagavan. Then laughingly, Then laughing loudly, he came over to me, hugged me, and called out, Ananda, Ananda. This is how these ganja-taking people behave. It was
ecstasy.
It was not a brief hug. Madhava Swami told me later that he held me tightly for about 2 minutes. After the first few seconds, I completely lost awareness of my body and the world. Initially, there was a feeling of happiness and bliss, but this soon gave way to a state where there were no feelings and no experiences. I did not lose consciousness. I just ceased to be aware of anything that was going on around me. I remained in the state for about 15 minutes. When I recovered my usual world consciousness, I was standing alone in the bathroom. Madhava Swami and Bhagavan had long since departed for breakfast. I have not seen them open the door and leave, nor had I heard the breakfast bell. So this experience completely changed my life. As soon as I recovered normal consciousness, I knew that my working life at Ramana Ashram had come to an end. I knew that henceforth I would be living outside the ashram and spending most of my time in meditation. There was a rule that only those who worked in the ashram could live in their full time. Those who wanted to spend their time in meditation had to live somewhere else. I thus knew that I would have to leave the ashram and fend for myself. But the thought of losing my regular meals and my room never troubled me.